This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 31st at 10:49 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like 2020 will be over.
Yeah, thank God. Let's talk Ohio politics.
Welcome to Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly political podcast that helped guide you through what really was the abomination of 2020. But we are on the doorstep of a new year, a fresh start, a new beginning. But things will probably still be terrible for at least a while as the pandemic rages on.
Yeah, say what you will about 2020. It certainly was interesting. Now, we're recording this on New Year's Eve, which is the perfect opportunity to recap the trash fire that was 2020.
It really was a busy trash fire of a year. Lots of news, and obviously none bigger than the coronavirus pandemic.
The circumstances at the Arnold are ideal for the spread of disease.
Open Ohio now!
Open Ohio now!
Quarantine and isolation are for people who are actually sick.
This is just a ticking time bomb waiting to blow up, and we're going to have an absolute outbreak on our hands.
Look, we're going to get through this. We got to go through this gauntlet. We got to run this gauntlet. And we got to try to get through that gauntlet without losing too many of us.
That was Governor DeWine announcing the cancellation of the Arnold Fitness Expo. Former Ohio Senate candidate Melissa Atkinson leading protests outside the State House. Republican State Senator Christina Rogner. Democratic State Rep Jessica Miranda accurately predicting the November outbreak in July. So kudos to her. And Governor DeWine again talking about why he opted to close schools in March. Mike, quite a wild ride that, as we said, will continue in at least some form, likely through all of 2021.
Yeah, when you think back, it was just incredible. I mean, really, truly incredible just what this year was. I mean, think about it. 1 year ago on December 31st, 2019, we thought the big story was going to be the impeachment trial of Donald Trump. That was on the horizon. And then, of course, the campaign.
Right.
In early February... I mean, we knew the coronavirus was out there. It popped up in China. We really weren't paying that close attention to it. All of a sudden, early March, it just went bananas and really caught all of us off guard. And it was just an incredible year. And of course, for the thousands of folks who lost folks, it's just been an incredibly tragic year.
Yeah, it really has. I have, obviously, to this point, it's the story of my lifetime. It's the biggest news story that I've ever seen. I assume it will be the biggest that I ever will see. This is a once in a century pandemic.
Let's hope.
I mean, that's what the experts generally say, that this is a once in a century event. But when you talk about schools being closed, restaurants being closed, a stay at home order, a curfew, I mean, these are things that we have never seen. And this was, again, like you say, this was something that happened really from late February to late March.
Yeah.
I mean, I think restaurants were closed around March 16th, if I remember correctly, and our whole newsroom had to go to remote reporting, and so that was very strange. I mean, obviously, we're not, you know, that's a relatively minor blip on the scale of how this affected some people's lives, but it changed everything from a news standpoint, from a regular life standpoint. And I had even people who are 90 years old had never seen anything like this.
I mean, we canceled an election. Governor DeWine, remember, I never forget that day when he had ramped up. He had canceled the Arnold Festival the week before, and he had said that St. Patrick's Day, you all got to stay home and shut restaurants and bars. And then, of course, St. Patrick's Day was the primary day. And it was the day before, 12 hours before the election, he said, nope, we're not going to tell people to stay home, and then ask them to come out and vote. And he had a judge. He went to court to try to get a judge to cancel it. And the judge said, no, you can't do this. Legislature has to do it. And so then he had his health director, Dr. Amy Acton at the time, do it. And that just threw everything into turmoil. And it was, And that was just sort of the appetizer for the whole year. I mean, I just remember the streets being completely empty back in March, and it was surreal. We had no campaign for president. We had virtual conventions. We all went to mail-in balloting. It was just And then, of course, you know, how the state handled the pandemic. Governor DeWine, pro-business, very fiscally conservative, low government intervention Republican, is having to shut things down, shut business down, put people out of work. And it was just, you could just, it was just an incredible, incredible first half of the year. And then we sort of got into the sort of the new normal of this in the second half of the year. But, you know, we still don't know what we don't know about this virus and the reaction to it. And the history books will write it in the next decades. But to live through it was something else.
Yeah. When you start talking about the March situation, I remember the week that restaurants were closed and then the stay-at-home order issued not long after that, I think about a week after that. And driving into work, I come to work around 4 a.m. because I'm the morning news anchor, so it's already just completely wide open traffic. But there was no one on the road except truckers and myself, I felt like. And then going home in the early afternoons, it was I every day I felt like I was on a supply run in a zombie apocalypse movie. Yeah. I felt like I was the only person on the road. I felt like I didn't belong on the road, like I was doing something wrong by going to and from work every day. It was such a surreal, out of body experience almost at times. And then I really can't put it into words. I'm really almost dumbfounded when I start thinking back as to about what happened. And then, you know, I have two young children and one who was a kindergartner, and then, you know, schools get canceled. Like what? Yeah. Schools are canceled? There's no school? What a time.
It should have been a pretty straightforward response at all levels of government. And then to see it politicized as much as it was just, it made it that much more extraordinary that, you know, President Trump didn't really take it seriously publicly. He took it seriously privately, as we learned through the Bob Woodward book. But publicly, he saw it as an attempt to get him out of office. And the response was disjointed and contradictory. And I mean, wearing a mask became the ultimate political football, which just is mind-boggling.
Yeah, the government was literally just asking you not to spit on other people during a pandemic, and it became such a symbol. As you mentioned with President Trump, and as you mentioned here in Ohio, business is obviously very affected by this pandemic, but so was state government, which meant in turn, so was our ability to hold an election.
We should not be in a place where people have to choose between their health and safety and expressing their opinions through democracy.
The fact that it was so immediate was very confusing, too. The judge ruled, and you know, less than 2 minutes later, the Board of Elections was saying the opposite of what he had just ruled. So I wasn't sure, you know, should I set my alarm for 4 a.m.?
They need to make sure that they're able to deliver a vote-by-mail election in the first state that's really done it since the beginning of this pandemic.
I think the intensity in this election was already a 12 on a 1 to 10 scale, and this just ratchets up to like 15.
The big surprise is the fact that pieces of eastern Ohio that used to be Democrat, reliably so, are now turning Republican, with Mahoning County being perhaps the most prominent of those.
Lots of voices there. That was Jen Miller from the Ohio League of Women Voters, Franklin County poll worker Jim McKee, Secretary of State Frank LaRose talking about how he wanted Congress to speed up ballot delivery by the Postal Service. Also, Republican pollster Neil Newhouse talking about increased interest in the election after the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And then finally, GOP strategist Mark Weaver talking about Eastern Ohio being part of the reason President Trump was able to win Ohio. And Mike, we did sort of mention the arc of this whole election, but it started with the craziness around canceling what was supposed to be a St. Patrick's Day primary. It was, I mean, obviously that word cancellation was a little fudgy, and Larry Householder later took issue with that when they rescheduled things, but they closed the polls.
Yeah, I mean, it really did make it, logically, it made no sense to be telling people you have to stay home, you have to keep your kids home from school, you cannot go to work, but then, yeah, come on out and vote. And so logically, it made sense. The whole handling of it was bungled. And, you know, thankfully, Ohio's primary really didn't matter. There weren't any real contested races. I think the one race that probably was affected the most was Joyce Beatty race with Morgan Harper for the Democratic nomination for the Central Ohio Congressional District. Morgan Harper probably would argue that she would have had a better shot had the pandemic not occurred, but still she would have been a heavy underdog. the presidential primary was decided by then. You know, Joe Biden had basically almost wrapped up the nomination, so our vote didn't really matter on that. Of course, Republican nomination was never in doubt. So, thankfully, there wasn't any huge consequence to canceling that election, but you think we would have learned how to make accommodations for the November election with 6 months' notice, and we didn't. I mean, they basically just ran the November election like we always do, with minor adjustments to mail-in voting. And it turned out, didn't really matter, because we had huge turnout, and again, solidified that Ohio is a red state. I don't think there's much doubt in that right now.
Yeah, being the cynical politicos that we are, I would say they did learn from what happened in the primary, and they Republicans, quite frankly, didn't care. It was in their interest to run out the clock. It was in Frank LaRose's interest to not make a lot of changes that would increase turnout, which in most cases people think favors Democrats. Not always, right? It's not a one-to-one thing. But
no, this year proved it. This year proved it. We had huge turnout, and it benefited both parties. It benefited parties.
One thing that was greatly affected was in terms of ballot issues. People couldn't go out and gather signatures. They couldn't put the marijuana issue on the ballot. They couldn't put other things on this ballot, which people often try to do during presidential election years when turnout is especially high, that they just couldn't put statewide issues before voters. So that did kick the can down the road, especially with the legalization of recreational marijuana, which people wanted to get on the 2020 ballot.
Yeah, there were other issues. God, we forget now. I think the energy bailout repeal, and there was talk of the minimum wage, minimum wage, and it affected campaigning. The Republicans candidates, by and large, continued their door to door campaigning, scaled back a little bit. And Democrats really didn't. And I think that hurt them, especially in the state legislative races around the state. The virtual campaigning is not campaigning. You're not getting the FaceTime. You're not shaking hands. You couldn't shake hands. Couldn't knock on doors. And it really affected campaigns throughout the year. But in the end, I think that the election, people turned out. They were engaged and they voted in record numbers here in Ohio. It should show that voter turnout does not favor one party or the other. So let's get as many people out to vote as we can. Let's make it as easy as possible for people to vote and let the chips fall where they may. I think that's one lesson from 2020.
Yeah, another major story here in 2020, as like the pandemic and like the election we've just talked about, just as the first wave of coronavirus seemed to be subsiding, remember how hard we worked to flatten the curve? Remember all that? Seems like 10 years ago. The Minneapolis police killing of George Floyd ignited a nationwide firestorm of protests against racial inequities in policing.
Keep it peaceful. We have a curfew.
Do that. Are they not human?
We got it wrong. We'll tell you we got it wrong. We'll discipline the person who got it wrong.
Do you feel like you've gotten it wrong over the last couple of days?
Oh, there's been mistakes made. Absolutely. Again, this was a fluid situation that every large city in the country is dealing with.
The sights and sounds of protests and police responding in Columbus last May and June. Protests were initially drawn out by Floyd's killing, but then police's response to those protests became another huge story. You heard Columbus Police Chief Tom Quinlan there saying that, quote, mistakes were made, including the heavy-handed use of pepper spray and wooden bullets. Reforms followed in Columbus and around the country, but with some high-profile recent police killings here in Columbus, and also the Federal Justice Department declining to bring charges against the officer who killed 12-year-old Tamir Rice in Cleveland. Mike, this is obviously clearly an issue not going away.
No, I think it's been an issue really since the advent of easy video from mobile phones. I think the iPhone will be seen as a major tool in police reform. When you think when history is written, the fact that some of these things now are getting caught on camera, and it's showing what African-Americans have long complained, that they are treated unfairly by police many times. And I think the George Floyd killing was really a tipping point. It was just so egregious. And now politicians who were, always pretty quick to defend police and say they have a tough job, which they do. absolutely do. The video evidence is just irrefutable in some of these cases, and you're seeing a political change. Now, the defund the police effort may have backfired a bit on Democrats, but it was just a really another watershed event of the year.
Yeah, if you look at two recent police killings here in Columbus, there was one of Casey Goodson Jr. shot by a Franklin County deputy who was working with the federal task force. That deputy did not have on a body camera, so we really don't know what happened. It's he said versus he said versus what the family says happened at the scene versus the killing of Andre Hill by Columbus, now former Columbus officer Adam Coy, who was fired within a week. The difference that there was because of body camera footage. And again, we don't know the exact circumstances of what happened with Casey Goodson Jr. Maybe it was not as egregious as what the Adam Coy shooting appeared to be. But again, like you say, sunshine is the best disinfectant here. Just have police with body cameras, no matter what it costs, no matter what the data upkeep is. It's important enough that we have to do it.
Yeah, police have to wear them and turn them on. And that was in the case of Mr. Hill, we really don't know what was said. We can see what happened in the moments before the shooting, but we don't know what was said. And it's a watershed. I think that police have always been held up with such high regard politically, and as they should. Let's face it, they are by and large defending us and keeping us safe. But the accountability is really taken a turn in the past year, and it has become politically safe for mayors, for governors to demand of officers and police unions more accountability. And that's what this past year has done.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, just looking back to this past summer, it did sort of get lost in the chaos of the pandemic and then the election and the election fallout. I mean, the protests we saw were just remarkable, like something we had not seen in a couple generations. I mean, thousands of people were on the streets of every American city. Police were tear gassing and pepper spraying and shooting wooden projectiles at people. Just the scenes of these protests was astonishing.
Yeah, and it went beyond police conduct and police accountability. It went to the whole issue of systemic racism, and it really generated a lot of discussion. And I think, we've had these discussions in the past, but I think that they were amplified greatly so, and hopefully will continue in the months and years ahead as to looking at not just how police treat people of color, but how society in general treats people of color as far as diversity in organizations, diversity in among police officers and newsrooms and political office. And these discussions hopefully will continue. And they have. They haven't really died down. They've continued in the months since late May, which is a good thing. And it became an issue in the campaign. We have our first African-American person of color elected to vice president. And I think those discussions will continue.
In our yearly roundup, last but not least here, especially in the hearts of politicos like ourselves, it's one of the greatest slash worst slash most bizarre scandals in recent memory. It is the nuclear bailout fiasco.
We're here today to announce the arrest of Larry Householder, the Speaker of the House of the state of Ohio, and four other defendants for racketeering in relation to what is likely the largest bribery money laundering scheme ever perpetrated against the people of the state of Ohio.
That is U.S. Attorney David DeVillers speaking in July about a bombshell federal indictment accusing Householder of leading a bribery scheme in order to pass the nuclear bailout.
The bailout, or House Bill 6, was 7 years in the making. It could not pass until Householder retook the Speaker's gavel. But with this massive bribery scheme, it would surely be repealed, right? So much mud on it, it's got to go, right? Well, some lawmakers, like Republican Representative Dick Stein, say even though it was tainted by this massive indictment, collecting a fee from every electric customer in Ohio to save some nuclear and coal plants makes sense.
It provides 90% of Ohio's carbon-free energy generation in this state and 15% of its base load. Those are all policy reasons why We felt, or I felt, and I think other members felt, HB 6 was an advantage.
Some did, but others, like Democratic Representative Cedric Denson, said it needs to go.
For the life of me, when now that we've figured out all the games, in my opinion, that had been played through House Bill 6, why would we want to be on the hook and or in the position to look as though we're not moving in the direction of at least disassociating ourselves with something that we've just learned?
But Denson will have to wait at least a little longer. The Ohio Supreme Court did rule in late December that the fees associated with the nuclear bailout would not be immediately collected, but the rest of the law remains in place. Mike, I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't include that soundbite of Larry Householder saying things got a little wild.
Yes.
What? This is a bonkers scandal in the State House that there are many, many different layers to. But this is, again, another astonishing story. Larry Householder, the political machine that is Larry Householder, retakes the House, the Speaker of the House office, and then, according to investigators, leads this massive bribery scheme to pass this nuclear bailout.
Yeah, basically this investigation confirmed all of the rumors that political watchers and journalists had been hearing for the past couple of years, that there was so much money sloshing around the State House, and they all suspected it had to do with, you know, the massive utility up in Cleveland, First Energy, but nobody, I mean, reporters were poking around, they couldn't get at it. Well, the Justice Department did, wiretaps, people blowing the whistle, and allegedly, it was all part of this scheme to get Larry Householder to become Speaker and then get the bailout for the nuclear plants up on Lake Erie. It's just an incredible story, and it's far from over. Two people have pleaded guilty. We're waiting for more stuff. It reached into the agency that regulates utilities. The chairman had to step down after his house was raided. There's much more to come on this story.
You know, things just got a little wild, Mike. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, I'm just really surprised that lawmakers, I guess I'm not surprised, but I thought that lawmakers would do something, at least delay it a year. Yeah. And the big thing is, the big unanswered question, aside from the criminal complaints and the indictments and the charges and whether or not they were bribes or just political hardball, we still do not know if the company that got the bailouts for those nuclear plants really needs the bailout. That we don't have the books.
Yeah, they haven't opened their books.
All lawmakers have to do is say, well, let's delay it a year, open your books. If you deserve the bailout, if it's good policy, we'll keep it. If you don't, we'll repeal it. It seems pretty simple, but it just shows you that when it comes to huge money and big energy, big utilities, it's nothing's easy.
Yeah, because First Energy also does not have a PR person. They decided to do stock buybacks and executive bonuses not long after getting this nuclear bailout. What a crazy story. I mean, Larry Householder was a phoenix risen from the ashes. We talked at length about how Larry Householder was such a talented politician, and now it looks like new House Speaker Bob Kupp is going to exile him once the new session starts. Householder actually won re-election in the fall after this whole scandal was announced, because he was running unopposed, and the House, according to their current rules, can only exile a lawmaker once. So they didn't want to do it then. They thought they should do it after he takes office again in January. So Larry Householder, as of this recording, still a lawmaker in the Ohio House, but you wouldn't think that would last long, but
yeah, I don't know. I'm still not convinced that they bounce him before his trial. I think, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty, and they could use that argument. And he still has some sway, probably. And you know, what also is incredible is it really wasn't an issue in the fall campaign. It was mentioned, but it never was the polarizing issue that it could have been. And I think that's because there was so much else going on. There was the pandemic. There was Donald Trump. It just got lost. And the fact that it was such an unusual campaign, and there weren't strong opponents to take on Republicans because of the scandal happened so late.
And our state is so gerrymandered. The legislative districts are so gerrymandered. There are really no political consequences to a massive scandal like this. I mean, what's going to happen? No, they're not going to vote a Democrat into these districts. It's just...
Yeah, but it's not over, as we said. And I think Mike DeWine, Democrats will try to tie Mike DeWine to it. You know, he appointed the chairman of the PUCO, the regulating authority, who had to step down because of his ties to First Energy and the FBI raid. And they will, Democrats will certainly try to take advantage of it over the next 2 years.
Anyway, 2020, what a year. We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious CBUS is WOSU's series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. We leave you this episode this year with our namesake award, the Snollygoster of the Week, which honors the shrewdest politician of the past 7 days. But since this is the final episode of 2020, we have decided to honor our Snollygoster of the Year.
Yes, Snollygoster of the Year. Now, there were some obvious choices. Former House Speaker Larry Householder, who we just talked about. There's Congressman Jim Jordan, who rattles off conspiracy theories like an auctioneer. Former Ohio Public Health Director Amy Acton. Yes, Amy Acton.
Queen Acton?
Yeah, she's shrewdly using her popular role as the COVID superfighter to lay the groundwork for a possible political run. We stress the word possible. And of course, President Trump for repeatedly and falsely continuing to claim that he's won the election.
But our Snollygoster of the Year is Governor Mike DeWine. Yes, the lovable grandfather, the husband of Fran, the grandfather of 26, who has drawn largely positive reviews for his science-first handling of the pandemic. But make no mistake, behind that aw-shucks grandfatherly demeanor is a pretty shrewd politician.
Indeed. For the past 10 months, he has used his political talents to, first, last spring, aggressively take on COVID and largely close down the state, and then he gradually reopened it.
And lately, as cases have been sharply rising, he has pleaded, even begged with Ohioans to wear masks and stay home, but he has resisted calls from the left to shut down the state again.
And despite taking the opposite approach of President Trump, he never openly criticized the president and never drew the ire of Donald Trump for his approach to COVID, though many of Donald Trump's supporters do not like Mike DeWine.
No, they certainly don't. It's certainly his handling of COVID in the early months. So call it leadership, call it shrewd political maneuvering, probably a combination of the two, but whatever it is, Governor DeWine, you are our Snollygoster of the Year. What an honor.
Yes, we mean that in the
in put that
the,
on your resume,
in
Mike.
The highest, in the best possible way. I think by and large, I think you have to give Governor DeWine a lot of credit for the way he's handled this. But it's been a masterful political, just looking at the politics of it, it's been a masterful political performance. He has split that line between the right and the left and tried to keep the state moving forward. So good leadership, yes. Shrewd leadership, that as well.
Yeah, definitely. The stakes are higher now than they were in March, certainly. I mean, you know, March was the unknown. We didn't know what was going to happen. So that's largely why he took the advice of scientists like Amy Acton when he decided to close down schools, close down restaurants. I mean, just based on the numbers, you would certainly say there's more of a case for doing that now. But I think it's largely politically untenable. I mean, he's on the clock for re-election at this point. Whatever it is, Mike, whatever it is. I don't know. Either way, Mike DeWine, you are Snollygoster of the Year Award. If you have a suggestion for our Snollygoster of the Week for next time around, send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Thanks to all our listeners for another great year of listening. We recapped the more serious segments that we did. We do try to keep the show light when we can. We try to call ourselves the civil wise asses. So help us live up to that. Send us some story ideas. Whatever you want to hear on this show, let us know. snollygoster@wosu.org. A very, very big thanks to our audio engineer, Eric French, our student producer, Jack Long, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis. Until next week, until next year, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.